Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the History of Rock podcast. His name is Brandon. He's the DJ.
His name is Shim. He's the rock star. Class is in session. And there you go. We're talking Limp Bizkit today. And this one is going to be covering... And see, I'm already nervous because I just restarted my computer and it was getting a little glitchy right there. So we're going to try and ride this out. We're gonna, look, we're just going to power through it. If it gets bad, you and I are going to have to scrap this and figure something out. But anyway... So we're going to cover this essentially because we just got done talking about a significant other. And then we're talking about chocolate starfish and hot dog flavored water. But we're not starting with the album. We're starting with the Napster tour because the timeline was they recorded the album. They did the Napster tour. They released the album. And then we'll get into like the whole Eminem beef and stuff like that.
This is going to be such a great couple of episodes. This is going to be great. So this is a two-parter. We're doing this in two parts.
Two-parter. That's a two-parter right there.
I've been looking forward to this. The one that we did for Significant Other and this one. Very much looking forward. So let's get into it, okay? So how do we start?
First thing we're going to do is we're obviously talking about Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. Release date, October 17th in the year 2000.
Dude, and then 99 and 2000 was a massive year for them. When you look at the singles, they had five hit singles released in less than a year apart from each other.
Yeah, so the singles
and a half years.
Yeah, Take a Look Around, which was released May 30th in the year 2000. And then it went, My Generation and Roland were actually released at the same time. And then you had My Way, and then you had Boiler. So those were the five singles that you had here for Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog.
Sidebar, did you like Boiler? Did you like that last single?
Boiler.
Really? I always thought Boiler was kind of a phone-in. It was like, we got to get one more single. It wasn't as good as the first four. It didn't have the hooks. It's very dark and it's a little more artsy. But I always thought Boiler was like, single.
Yeah. As a single, I could definitely see that one is not what you would normally release as a single. The music video is fucked up. Have you ever seen the music video?
Well, I know. It's a film. Like, it's a whole feature film. And it's brilliant, but I always remember thinking, this is weird to put this much energy, this much time into that song that literally is just verse, chorus out. And the verses are the same.
I love it. I love the song. The mood of the song, I was always a big fan. So, yeah.
All right.
So kicking things off here. So the year after Significant Other, the band jumped back into the studio from February to May of the year 2000. Call out to Conan O'Brien right there. And this was to record Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. Now, before the album was released, Limp Bizkit, they did a free tour that was sponsored by Napster, the Back to Basics tour with Cypress Hill. And obviously, the big thing of note here with it being Napster was that Metallica had a major problem with Napster. And so, of course, Limp Bizkit decided, well, we're going to do the complete opposite then. We are going to now go have them sponsor our tour, and it's going to be a free tour. Like, we're not charging people for this thing.
Yeah. So do we get into how they got paid for that tour? Because it really pissed off everyone in the fucking music business. You might not realize how pivotal that is, but Napster basically was the benchmark of, we're going to steal everyone's money and then just make it disappear. We're going to devalue the thing that everyone's making. And Fred Durst was the first. Metallica got hated because they were the first people to turn around and say, fuck those guys, they're wrong. Limp Bizkit was loved because they were the first band to say, embrace this, they're awesome, music should be free. And in reality, it's kind of a dick move. It's great for the fans, bad for the artist, because then anyone else who turns around and says, dude, I don't like Napster taking my money, the fans look at them and go, man, Fred Durst cool with it. What's your fucking problem? It was a big deal. MTV did a whole all-access special on the tour with VJ, Brian McFadden or McFadden?
McFadden.
McFadden. Following the band. Now, you have something here, but I didn't know Brian McFadden. He didn't, MTV and all that stuff, very American. The singles and the record and the tour for Limp Bizkit made it over to Australia. But all the MTV shit, all the promotional stuff they did that they became infamous for, that didn't make it over here.
Nah, and I'll get to that here in a minute. Because I'm looking up. I put in that the name of the tour was the Back to Basics tour. But I'm not completely... Oh, yeah. It says here, the Back to Basics tour will kick off July 4th. It was the Limp Dependence, which that's something that will come up later on when we're talking about the name of the album. But yeah, so Brian McFadden, he was this dude. He was kind of like he looked like he could probably be in a boy band, but like following him on this MTV All Access special, it literally felt like he was just excited to be around famous people and not like fangirling it. But I don't know. Like, I just, I always got a weird vibe from Brian McFadden where there was a lot of other DJs that were on MTV where it was like, yeah, that guy's cool. Or, oh, I fucking hate that guy. McFadden was somehow in this mid, like, is he cool? Is he not, like, what's going on there with this guy?
Is he like a jock that got a backstage pass and just wasn't quite sure what to do
no,
with it?
No, because, yeah, but he didn't play any of the manly sports. Like, I don't, like, he played tennis.
Okay. That says everything. Tennis playing.
No, I don't know if he did or I don't know if he did or not, but it's just like, I did, like, yeah, I put that note in there because I was like, I was never quite. But then again, that's what MTV was. Remember when we were talking about Woodstock 99 and how the audience there, which were there to see Korn and Limp Bizkit and Rage and Metallica, they hated MTV because it was like, get, like, you guys can't be in both camps. You cannot be in the rock camp as well as the pop camp. You cannot do that. And MTV quite brilliantly did do that for a while. And then a lot of the VJs were the ones that would get shit for that, like Carson Daly. Like, he was a guy that he would be gal palling around with Britney Spears, and all of a sudden he's talking to Korn, and he's
No,
but that
I think
the
it's
job.
One of those
can't
things
blame
where,
him.
Yeah, they're stuck in the middle of the whole thing, and it comes because you had crews in high school and stuff that were like, if you like Korn and the Bizkit and Deftones, then you don't. Then we hate everyone that likes Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys.
Yep.
So for them to be on the same TV show was really kind of counterintuitive, but at the same time, if MTV was only showing Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys, those guys would have been the first to call in and say, you guys suck, play some real music, man. And then when they do, they're like, we're not sure how to feel about you playing real music, but then thanks for the videos, but fuck you too. Like, it's all a bit weird. It's all a bit weird.
Yeah, it would have been like the people who wanted like a Headbangers Ball, but then they would complain about Headbangers Ball. It's just, it's...
Yeah, you gotta have something
to say. It was a weird,
something.
It was definitely a weird time for music television, and quite frankly, the last time for music television, because it's all reality shows now, and I started watching Jersey Shore with my wife, and I'm enjoying it.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. Rest in peace.
Oh, no, dude, it's great. Are you kidding me?
You like
it?
Oh,
fuck yeah. Where's the beach?
Let's
not.
No, we're on the Limp Bizkit train. I don't
want
to get on the Jersey
Shore train.
Sorry.
All right.
So the special takes place where?
No, this is mine. Shut up. The special takes place for the tour stop in Detroit, Michigan. There's going to be two shows that were going to happen that time. So Durst, he would call into the local radio stations to announce when and where to get in line for the tickets, because like we said, they were free.
Yeah. And they have footage from their hotel where Fred pays Vern Troyer's manager, who is also a little person, $3,000. Why did I need to say that? $3,000.
Because Vern Troyer was a little person. Vern Troyer's mini-me.
No, I get it, but I don't know why that's relevant. I'll find out in a minute. $3,000. They paid him. They paid him $3,000 to spend half an hour naked. He also pays one of his assistants to shave his head like a bald guy for $1,000. So they treated him like a whore.
Fred would just like throw money around to get people to do crazy things. And so Vern Troyer's manager, who was also a little person, strips butt ass naked. And then they take Fred's assistant or one of his assistants. And so they don't obviously just shave his head completely. They leave the sides and the back. So it looks like he's like Dr. Phil. And that's what they were doing with that. So, yeah, I mean, you could tell that Fred was, like, he's the guy that liked to spend his money. So MTV, they ended up going to the front of the line where people were lining up for the tickets. And they go to these two girls who were the very first ones in line. They said that they had gotten there at 2 a.m. So they end up putting, God, I remember even at the time when I watched this stuff live, like, I'm pretty sure I was home this weekend watching MTV All Access on this Limp Bizkit tour. And they put one of the girls on the phone with Fred. And she's like, do you remember me? I'm the one that gave you all those poems. And there's this confusion where Fred's like, Holmes? Holmes? Poems? Bones? Poems! Oh, poems. Yeah. And it's like, did you fucking think he was going to be like, oh, yeah, like I remember you, and this was amazing. Right. And so they go on this really awkward conversation. And then it wraps up with her going, so what are you going to do? Are you going to help me out? Are you going to help me out with my poems? Like, I don't know why she sounds like a valley girl. Like, it's, are you going to help me out? And it's just, it's so fucking awkward. Again, this is on YouTube. For anybody who doesn't believe me, like, go watch this.
I need to see that now. And then, so the next thing, Fred ends up going to the front of the line, and there is one guy there that won't take his headphones off. And even while Fred is talking to them, he's holding them to his ears, bobbing up and down. That strikes me as strange. He's in the front of the line. He's just doing this while Fred Durst is right there trying to talk to him.
So Fred shows up, and then all the guys and girls that are at the front of the line kind of corral around. And this one dude has these headphones on, and he's just fucking bopping up and down. And I'm telling you, guys, go watch this. It's on YouTube.
And can you put the link in the description? Put the link down there, because I got to see it.
He's got, like, it's to one point where he takes the headphones off, right? So he's like this.
Yeah.
But he's got it right here. And Fred's talking to them, like, hey, so how long you guys been here? What are you planning on doing? You know, we're probably going to bring you guys some food. And the guy's like, we have a party. And he's just, I'm like, this guy, like... Is he on drugs? Like, no.
He's definitely on drugs.
I think he's just that guy. No joke. I think he was just that guy. But there's a reason I wrote that note in there, because it stood out to me back then, 20 goddamn years ago when I watched this live. And even now, I'm like, I wonder what happened to that headphoned jackass.
He's probably still there. Like, where'd everybody
go?
He's
probably still got his fucking headphones on. So as they're showing kind of behind the scenes stuff, Wes Borland, he's got this full suit that lights up, but it starts causing feedback with his guitar.
And
he starts to get pissed, like, because he'll have the guitar out, and then the second he brings it close to his body, you hear like that. So then Fred recommends, hey, so what if you put a towel between it? Like, try that. And you can tell Wes is pissed, because he's put a lot of time and effort into, like, he built this suit himself. The way that part ended was Wes tells Fred, like, hey, they're going to try and wrap it in aluminum foil. Like, they're going to try to find a way to protect the guitar so it's not going to cause this problem. The footage from the concert, he's not wearing that. I don't think they ever got it figured out. However, that suit, you can see him wearing it in the video for Roland. When they're on top of the World Trade Center, that's that suit that he's wearing in that music video. And there's a point where the cameras are kind of following him around, and you can tell he's pissed. Like, he's not happy.
I would be too. I'd give major props
to Wes, because they come up right to him, and he's able to look at the camera, and he's like, not right now, guys. Like, super fucking calm. Now, obviously, Fred's like, yeah, this isn't really him pissed. like it'd be a lot different if he was really pissed. But I gave him major props, because I can only imagine how frustrated he was that he put all this time and effort into this suit, and he's not going to be able to wear it. And he's able to just be like, hey, not right now, guys. And there's even more, like, crazy footage backstage where they have Vern Troyer. He's acting as, like, a security guard for Limp Bizkit. And I told you my story with Vern Troyer, where when I went to shake his hand, his handler was like, you can shake his hand, but don't squeeze. Like, he was, like, brittle. Like, his bones were brittle. And there's a part where Wes is kind of messing around with Vern Troyer, and he goes to pick him up. And immediately Vern's like, easy, easy. Like you can tell, like, he wants to make sure that it doesn't get out of hand. He doesn't get dropped. And you know, everything ends up being fine. And Wes puts him right back down, and they're all goofing around and stuff. But it's really interesting knowing having met him, what that's like.
That must be a really weird way to live your life, to know that every corner you turn around is like, So they brought someone from the crowd up to perform Method Man's part of In It Together Now. He did
In Together Now. God damn it. Get the name of the song right.
Oh, sorry. In Together Now. I'm sorry. You're so fucking picky about that shit.
Oh, my God.
Really? Like, In It Together Now, In Together Now, you know what I mean. Everyone else knows what I mean. You're like, pronounce it correctly. I wrote it with capital letters on purpose.
All right, yeah, and your hit song was called Odd 2. the stage had a giant cyclone fence between the band and the stage. So Cypress Hill, now if I was trying to track this. So when Cypress Hill was up there, you know, you generally have barricade, space, security guards, stage. Like, that's your typical setup. Limp Bizkit didn't want that. They wanted the crowd as close as they could possibly get. So they got rid of the barricades, they got rid of the security guards, and they just threw up a cyclone fence. And we're going to find out a whole lot more about that here coming up in a minute.
What is a cyclone fence? What does that mean exactly?
It's like a metal fence.
Okay.
It's just called a cyclone fence. At least that's what I've always called it.
Okay.
Cool. But yeah, so it's just a standard like chain link fence.
Right.
I'm going to look that up now, make sure I'm not giving out bullshit information.
I was going to say. Yeah.
So as the concert's going on, what do you think people were going to do? They climb the fucking fence.
They're going to try to rush the
so
stage.
Durst is on the microphone and he's yelling at everybody else, you got to chill out, stop trying to get up on stage. And then he says, we are not responsible for your actions. Which when I, that's the second I heard that, I'm like, Woodstock 99. Like, you can tell that that's a direct call out to that shit.
Yeah.
So almost immediately after he says this, this one dude gets up into the middle. So the way that they had the chain link fence set up is that in the middle, there was a little stage for Fred to go on where he's kind of up above the crowd so that he's right there with the crowd. This dude climbs the fence, gets up over that thing, and fucking makes it onto the stage on the other side of the fence. So then Durst, a security guard, runs up and he's trying to take care of the guy because the guy's like squirming around. He's doing this stuff. And he's trying to get to Fred Durst. Security's trying to protect Fred Durst. So they fucking throwing this dude around. So then Durst gets on the microphone, and he calls out the security guard. And he says, let's hear a big fucking fuck you for this security guard right here. And it's like,
what?
That dude's saving you, man. Like, maybe not saving you, but like, what?
No, but he's trying. He's trying to help. Yeah.
Oh, like Durst,
specifically you.
He's legitimately that guy that he will push the envelope as much as he can, and then when something goes wrong, it's, oh my god, I wasn't expecting that. Like, you guys,
right.
What? And it's like no, like that's it. Just it was such a weird turn of events of what went down there.
Yeah, he's definitely,
I was right. Cyclone fence, chain link fence,
chain link in concrete. So like, no, he was always known for being the type of guy that it was just, how do I get as much controversy to happen? But I think that might be part of the reason why the band didn't survive at that level for a very long period, because after a while, people were like, it's a one trick pony. You're going to say things to get people riled up and you drop a big riff. And then Wes left and the riff stopped and there was one ballad and then it was over. It was over
behind
as quickly as
blue
it began.
Eyes. It wasn't even their ballad. It was a cover.
Yeah. Yeah, I always thought, yeah, never mind. But I was like, there was Significant Other and Chocolate Starfish. That was a great moment. They had 2 years. Biggest band in the world.
Hold on. There's some, like, even when they came out with Gold Cobra, the song, Gold Cobra, I'll fucking rock that shit to this day, man.
Yeah?
Fuck yeah.
You rock that shit. You go ahead and drop it. Drop that needle.
Yeah.
You, so hold on a second. Let me see. Wait, I think you just...
Oh, I kind of summed up what you were saying with the barricade and the space and all the other stuff like that. So I'll just jump into the next one here. So during a break in the show, they kind of go backstage and they're sitting in the staircase and they start talking about some of the difficulties of the setup. And one of them is they can't really see the crowd because the chain link fence, despite the fact that you can see through it, it's difficult for them to really get a vibe from the crowd. So they contemplate cutting some of the sections off that night.
Yeah.
And a lot of the production manager says that doing that, it's going to weaken the cage and this is not going to be safe. So ultimately, they ended up saying, no, we don't have to worry about, like, let's just leave it as is for tonight and then we'll adapt later. And then, of course, after the show, they have interviews with the managing staff and the production staff. And they're like, yeah, like, it's like any concert. It's like, you know, the first date, there's always stuff that goes wrong. And then you adapt from there. So what was for you? Okay, so here's one directly for you. Mr. Late Singer of the Sick Puppies, what would you say was the biggest thing that had to be changed from a first date of a tour that you guys were on, or even as a solo on the solo time? Like, was there something specifically that stood out? Like, yeah, we got to change that, man.
No, it was always gear. It was always a gear problem. I wish it had been something with security, but we always had. I remember there was one time with a sound guy. The sound guy was terrible. This is the funny thing. I remember this. His nickname was Spud. I don't remember his full name. It was so long ago. His nickname was Spud, right? So Spud, if you're listening, yeah, I'm talking about you. And I got no fucking problem saying it. Because he was doing sound, and he wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. And after every show, the crew and managers and the people who were the people who were running the event on that day, they'd be like, hey, man, we really couldn't hear your vocals. Like, you got to talk to the sound guy. You got to turn the vocals up. And it was like, man, that the snare drum was really like there was always a few things that were wrong. By the time we got to like the end of the first week, we're on tour. We're in the middle of nowhere. We're just on tour. And then we wake up to a note in the kitchen. Sorry, this really isn't for me. Have to go. Sorry to leave you hanging. and he just bounced. He just left. And we were like, we don't have a sound guy. And for anyone who's ever toured, not having a sound guy is a problem, because you put all your work, all your energy into playing every microphone, every single thing, every amp, every note you play. It all ends up going through two speakers, two big speakers that pump the sound out to the audience. And that's the only thing they're paying for. They come to the show to be like, I want to hear my favorite song played by my favorite band sounding as good as possible. You can sing the shit out of it perfectly. And if the mixer, if the guy who's mixing those two speakers sucks, you suck. And he just left. And we were like, we don't even have a guy that sucks anymore. We got no one. And we're on a headline tour.
What the fuck did you do?
We literally just had to call everyone that day and fly. We had to use an in-house sound guy, which is like every club usually has a guy that just babysits. He babysits the venue. So they know how to run the sound, but they don't know how to make your band sound good.
Yeah.
So usually it doesn't work out very well. Sometimes it does, but for us, it was like, no, we need our own sound guy that knows our songs, our instruments, our stuff, your own guy. So we were able to find someone, but we spent 48 hours calling around everyone being like, dude, we'll pay for everything. We'll give you a bonus. Like, we can't afford it, but we are fucked. It had never happened before or since. Normally, Jesus, They'll give you notice. They'll say, listen, man, I got to go home. This isn't for me. I got a problem at home. I'm giving you 5 days or 3 days. And you have at least a 2-day grace period to find someone and get him out there. He just left. We woke up to a fucking note. It was like,
damn.
It was like a bad Fuel song. Like, yeah, deep. That was a deep. Anyway, let's move on.
Steep cut.
Moving back to the album, The Chocolate Starfish, part of the title. Hold on a second. I got lost. I apologize for that. I totally lost my place. Moving back to the album, The Chocolate Starfish. This is I'm very interested in. The Chocolate Starfish, part of the title, comes from Fred Durst knowing people think he's an asshole. He knows that people think he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Wes Borland has stated in interviews that Durst calls himself the Chocolate Starfish because people call him an asshole all the time. So that's where the Chocolate Starfish comes from. He's referring to himself.
Yeah, it's himself. And then the hot dog flavored water part of the title, that comes from a joke that Wes Borland had made when the band was on tour. But I've seen kind of two different versions of this, and I'm not 100% sure which one is the reality here. But it was one of which was he made the comment while they were in New York at a food truck, and you have the hot dogs sitting in the water. Yeah. It's the hot dog water. And then the other story was that they were at like a gas station or something, and he saw Crystal Geyser flavored water, and he made a joke about hot dog flavored water or meat flavored water or beef jerky flavored water or something like that. So
right. The
joke is in there somewhere. I just wasn't able to lock in on exactly which one it is.
But the general concept is Fred Durst is the Chocolate Starfish and the band is the hot dog flavored water.
Well, I don't know if the band is necessarily the hot dog flavored water. I think it was more or less, because remember, like with $3 Bill, the name Limp Bizkit, the whole goal was this is coming up with the craziest goddamn names ever. And it's going to make sure that if the people who actually buy the album are the fans that we want, because they're willing to look past the stupid ass name.
Sidebar, did we actually get into the last episode where Significant Other, the name, specifically came from? I don't remember if it was as big a deal.
I don't think we did.
No, because Significant Other was not nearly as controversial as all the other names they gave all their other shit.
No, I was assuming just because with tracks like Nookie and the theme of the album was kind of about a significant other. A lot of
it was like half of it was a breakup album. It's funny how breakup albums are usually the hits for a band. They're coming from a real place.
Well, actually, hold on. It's funny because you bring that up, because I know with Beck, there was an album that he did where he admitted that he was kind of in a really good place, like in a relationship, and life was good. And when that album came out, people were like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't good. And it's like, God, like, that's what sucks. Like, does he need to be miserable to make good music for us? And kind of sparked that whole conversation a little bit there.
It's an endless conversation that will always happen from when Shakespeare was around. They'd say, we want you to be happy, but not too happy.
Yeah, because we want you to be happy enough. We want.
Yeah.
That's you. What
basically means is we want you to be happy enough that you'll continue to be sad enough to make the things that make us happier.
Yeah.
And that's really selfish and horrible for an artist, because basically it means like, we're only going to support your art if you continue to be unhappy. The moment you're happy, that's great, but we're going to move on to someone else.
Yeah.
So it's like a fucked up relationship with your fans. So going back to the biscuit, the biscuit. The Biscuit. No, I love The Biscuit. Oh, Little DJ Lethal. There was an original title for the album, Limp. How do you even say that?
Limp Dependence.
Limp Dependence Day. I was sorry. I was trying to. Sorry, man. Limp Dependence Day. But the band missed the deadline for a July 4th release date. Plus, there was a lot of people that thought it might be a little hard to pronounce. Yeah, just me. Just me.
Just go ahead, Brandon. But see, again, the name of that tour, like the Limp Dependence Back to Basics tour. You know, and that was kind of, which is funny. When you look up Back to Basics tour, by the way, there's a, so far, like Korn has done like four Back to Basics tours. They did one with Limp Bizkit. There's another, like Limp Bizkit's done more than one Back to Basics tour. Because essentially what I've noticed is what'll happen is when a band gets big, they'll kind of start to play the same songs. They play the hits, they play the singles, and then it gets kind of repetitive. Korn fell into this rut, unfortunately, where it's, you knew that when they stepped off stage, Jonathan Davis was going to come out to Chutes and Ladders, and you were going to get the, and then you were going to get the bagpipes, and then it would kick in, and that was the encore, and it was like always, it was very much the same set list. But then what they would do is like by Back to Basics tour, you'd get the deeper cuts, the things that you hadn't seen probably in a few years. And I remember when they did the Back to Basics tour, I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to that one. And then and it was great, and it was an amazing concert.
And that was the whole calling card for that tour. That was what it was. It was see your favorite bands playing the songs that they don't play normally. That was what the whole branding of it was, right?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like one of the things, too, is that they know they have hardcore fans, diehard fans that have been around for ages. I don't know why this popped into my head, but Incubus is a prime example of one of those bands. Mm-hmm. I went to college with a guy who was a huge Incubus fan.
Why did that need quotations?
Because he liked Morning View.
What the? You can like Morning. Did he not like Morning View and not know Science existed?
Had no fucking clue about that other shit.
Okay, then fuck him. Fuck
See, and
friend.
that's the thing. Like, I have no problems if you like you can like a later album more than the original stuff. Like, I'll probably get drugged through the mud. I love the Deftones newer stuff more so than the earlier stuff. I love the earlier stuff, but I really dig the sound that they've gone with over the past decade. And it shocked me because we went to see Incubus. There's me and my buddies that I was in radio broadcasting school with. Incubus was coming to town. We went and we kept talking about how this one guy was so excited to see Incubus because he's the biggest fan on the planet. And I was like, dude, you don't know. Like, first of all, you don't even know Make Yourself.
Yeah.
But then you don't know Science. And I was like, bitch, you want to go deep cut? Fungus Among Us, son?
Yeah.
Oh, that's an album I haven't listened to in ages. But anyway, we're talking about the biscuits. That was Incubus. But like, look, you can like later stuff, but don't claim to be the biggest fan of something if you don't know the history of it. Like, I've known people like that. There's people I know that are that consider themselves diehard wrestling fans now. But if you mention somebody from 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's a fucking blank slate because they don't know any of that stuff. Yeah, you can like it now, but don't fucking lie and be like, I'm the biggest fan on the planet when you don't know the fucking history. Same goes for sports. If you like a sports team, know where the fuck they've come from. Like, know that shit. Don't be a fake fan.
I just love how possessive people get about. Here's the thing. I can understand why people get so possessive about sports teams. I'm not a sports guy. I don't get possessive over sports teams. I've never understood why people get so possessive over bands. Where they're like, because I remember when it happened. I remember the day it happened to me. Check it out. I remember I wanted to be cool so bad. And I was like, I was learning to play guitar, and I was learning to play guitar because I love music and I love playing guitar. But I remember thinking, this might get the other cool kids to think I'm cool as well. This would be great. So I bought One Hot Minute, which was not, everyone was like, it sucks, Blood Sugar Sex Magik all the way, you're shit. And then there was Live Store and Copper, which was, there was Live Store and Copper, which was legit. And then there was, oh my God, why am I Green Day's album after Dookie, which was
Nimrod?
Blanking. No, Nimrod was in between. Anyway, point is, now it's going to drive me nuts. Go ahead and look it up
and you fucking talk.
Right after Dookie. So I went and picked up the album that came after Dookie because that was the time capsule I was in. They were touring that record. So I was getting to that record.
Oh, and Insomniac.
Thank you very much. Sorry for everyone who had to wait for that. Point being, I went to school and I'm like, yo, I love Green Day. And they're like, what, you got Insomniac just because of the singles off that like last month? So then I went and got Dookie. I came back to school and I was like, yo, dude, you're right, man. I just got Green Day's first album. It's so much better. And he was like, that's their third album, you fucking loser, you poser. And I was like, dude, I'm trying to be cool. Why do you hate me? And I remember thinking, why are these people so fucking full on about their music? I'm just trying to be like, yo, yeah, when I come around, well, see, that's great jams.
That's taking it to a whole other level of douchebaggery. Like, the thing that bothers me is when you have, and I'm more specifically talking about the people that are, I don't want to say braggadocious about it, but they are very outspoken about how big of a fan they are and how much of their life this band or whatever this thing is. And they make all these claims when in the reality of the situation, it's like, so how much do you actually know? And I'm not saying you need to know like what day Billy Joe Armstrong was born and all these other things, but you know, you should probably know a little bit of it.
But you're talking about people that walk around peacocking. They're peacocking like, I know everything and I will teach you things. And then it's like, no, you only know 25% of anything anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Okay. Right, I can dig it.
Back to Limp Bizkit.
Back to Brandon.
Yeah. So the track Hot Dog, which basically it kicks off the album. I mean, they have an intro, which, and I didn't even put it in here, but that outro again, it's so fucking funny. Go listen to the outro of Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavored Water with Ben Stiller. It's so good. Yeah. But so the opening track, which was Hot Dog, it has the word fuck in it 46 times. And the chorus also features lyrics from Nine Inch Nails, the songs Closer, The Perfect Drug, and Burn. And as I'm saying that, this is going to be the perfect place to stop because we're right at about 30 minutes. And... Perfect. This is going to lead into some of the stuff with Trent Reznor. And there's a lot more here about this part of the story that a lot of people don't know about Trent Reznor and that specific song.
Yeah. And I'm just going to leave it at that. This is the thing. And I'm choosing not to read this. I got to stop here. And then we're going to pick it up next week. And we're going to find out what the real beef is.
The beef, mate. It's going to play the beef. So that'll wrap it up for this episode here. Part one, Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. Next week, part two. Also be checking on Wednesdays for the remix episodes as those things drop. Make sure you're following Shim and I and all of our socials. TikTok, which, by the way, my TikTok, as we're recording this, it's doing pretty good.
Doing nicely. Thank you to everyone who's been
Every time I check, I've got like a dozen new followers, man. And awesome. I check like every few hours. And so I'm up to 1,720 now.
And thank you to everyone who's been supporting us on the socials and sharing the content and commenting on the comment. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week. His name is Brandon. He's the DJ.
His name is Shim. He's the rock star. Class dismissed. See, look at that. Nailed it.
Perfect. See?
Got it in 30. We can do an encore right now. That'd be like a good 5-10 minutes. We're good to go. I can brag more about my socials. Like, look, I've never really been one to toot my own horn when it comes to stuff. Because
well,
I always
never
feel like
really had, you've never really had your own socials that had your name that was yours alone.
I legit thought you were just going to say you've never really had something to toot your horn about. Like, that's where my brain went right there.
No, I'm going to say you've always been connected to KLAQ or other shit that wasn't your name. Yeah, it's totally
and that's
different.
And that's why it's feeling a lot better too. Like having it be my own shit. I am also very trepidatious about it, just because I know how quickly it can go away. And I get nervous that the bottom's going to fall out because I'm still continuing to see steady growth. Like we were just talking about when we wrapped up this episode, like with TikTok. I had the most recent shorts that are on TikTok that have done really well. The one about that gross ass bet with Nikki Sixx and Tommy Lee.
Yeah, I saw a lot of comments on that. A lot of people saying I can't unsee that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's over 60,000 views.
That's fantastic, man.
And then the one about Kerry King being on the Beastie Boys track, that's over 23,000 views. So
yeah.
And all I'm doing is I'm producing these things and they're just all going up on every different social media. It goes up on Instagram, it goes up on TikTok, and it goes up on YouTube. And it's truly as I stumbled into that kind of the Danny DeVito rule, which is make your content like Danny DeVito, short and engaging.
Shorthand engaging.
Like, even as I said that now, that was one tonight as we're recording this, which is the Monday before it drops. It's today's September 5th. It just had 3,000 views, like, in the first hour that it went up. Now, that's that spike I've told you about. Here's a little thing for people to learn when it comes to the YouTubes. So Instagram is even worse at this. Instagram, when you put a reel up, at least from my experience of the stuff that I'm doing, it hits for an hour and then it is done. Right. Like, that's pretty much all your, and maybe there's a threshold when you get a certain amount of followers that becomes, it's more sustainable for the views. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to YouTube, you'll see these spikes. Like, I'm looking at a little bar graph right now, and you can see when the videos drop, because it's like a bunch of views, and then it's like steady, and then right. a bunch of views. Yeah, yeah. But there's some of those videos that they'll get 200 views an hour for a few straight days, and those are the ones that end up with like 20 to 30,000 views on them.
Yeah,
that's so it. For anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, go watch this shit.
Don't go watch the shots. But yeah, no, you honestly, dude, you've inspired. I'm not. What do you call it? Tooting your own horn. I'm not further tooting the horn, but you've inspired me to get a little more on top of cutting some videos from my stuff. I'm chasing you now because, like, I've got a lot of stuff that I could be cutting. And one of the things, man, I'm sure you deal with it as well, is like, I, especially for me, I'm very spoiled. I have a history. I mean, I made the first viral video. I mean, that kind of ruined me. It's like if you have sex with fucking Scarlett Johansson, you lose your virginity to Scarlett Johansson, and then it's all downhill after that.
So
I remember I'd be like, oh, you make something good, you put it out and it does well, and that logically makes sense. And now, so many years later, it's like, well, you can make something great and it's such a different world. So really, it's about, you just have to stay doing it every single day. You have to make a certain amount of stuff. And if you don't have a good idea that day, you kind of got to force it out. You got to make something. And it becomes very stressful to be like, well, I've got to make something within 24 hours that is at least decent because I have no ideas today. And it goes against every artistic nature or creative nature, not even artistic, just like, I want to create something. You're not doing it for any other reason than it makes it a day job.
To get something done. Yep.
Yeah. And so there's a part of me where I'm like, if I have a goal, like if I'm like, hey, I need to learn how to sing this song by the end of the month because we're going on tour, then that's a goal. It's towards something I created. I can kill myself to achieve that goal. When you're doing it for socials, your goal is only to stay relevant. Mm-hmm. That is the only goal. It is to continue to build relevance so that you can then get to the point where you can have one half day a week where you get to create something you like. And that's what you work towards. And so after a while, when you get a week's worth of videos that don't get good views, it really affects you emotionally. You're like, dude, me back. This is now I'm a week behind because I did the same thing, but now I got no results because of something this I past can't control.
Weekend, that was this past weekend where, I mean, and Grant, like this past week, the whole week was actually, it was the biggest week that I've had since I've been focusing on my own shit. Like for the week, I had 55,000 views on my YouTube channel. That's just YouTube. That's not including any of the other stuff. But over the weekend, like I remember I told you'd see those spikes.
Yeah.
There was no fucking spikes. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this? Like, I don't like this. And that's where it becomes difficult, where you need to be able to distance yourself from what you're doing. I'm fortunate enough, like you were saying, how it can become a job, and then you feel like you're doing something because you feel like you have to do it. This thing needs to go up, and then it becomes a 9-to-5 job, which it kind of is at this point, except I'm starting it at 6 a.m. when I wake up. Yeah, and I'm still not getting paid. But I'm doing all of these things. I'm at least able to talk about things that interest me. Like I still enjoy it because I've been able to mix in. We do a lot of rock-oriented stuff. The sports stuff does really well. Disney stuff does really well. And just in general, there's one video I have coming up. One of my favorite actors who passed away a year ago, Michael K. Williams. He was the guy, he had the scar from like right here. He played Omar in The Wire, Chalky White in Boardwalk Empire. Yep. Love that guy on film. Like that guy was so amazing. And we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of him passing away. I think it's actually tomorrow, September 6th. So I did a whole video about him and how he got his scar because I thought that like it's
interesting. Yeah.
He's a really cool fucking guy. And it's unfortunate that he passed away as early as he did. And I wanted to make sure that obviously I'm not going to be the one that brings him back into the news on the 1 year anniversary. But with that being something that would probably trend on that day, I wanted to make sure that I was one of the people out there be like, hey, don't forget about Michael K. Williams. Like, this guy was the shit. Like, yeah. Dude, I'm telling you, Omar is one of the best written and acted characters in a television series I've ever seen. Mm. He's like up there. It's him and
I haven't seen it. I've heard of the show. I never watched it. Oh,
dude. Sorry. Like, he's the one. He walks through, so he'll come around the neighborhood, and he would always wear a big old trench coat, and he's carrying a shotgun. And everybody knows, fucking run. Like, when Omar is coming, run. Right. And so what you would always hear is, Omar coming, Omar's coming, Omar's coming. And then all the people fucking scatter, and then you just see him walking through the fucking neighborhood with the shotgun. It was just so... so fucking brilliant, man. I'm telling you, season one of The Wire might be some of the best television that's ever been created.
Damn, okay, cool. Yep, another one to get on the list of things to do when I get time.
Oh, and then there was, what was the other? Because there's two television show characters that are arguably my favorites, written and acted. So Omar is up there, and then Bill Haverchuk. Did you ever see Freaks and Geeks?
Oh, a couple episodes. I remember everyone started there.
Like, yeah, it's like I always forget her name. Linda.
It had Jonah Hill. It had Seth Rogen. It had...
No, I don't think Jonah Hill was in it. Oh, Linda. Yeah, Linda Cardellini, James Franco, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, James and Franco. Martin Starr, who's one of my favorite actors. He played Bill Haverchuk. Fucking amazing. Amazing.
Right. Awesome. So... have you ever heard of Oztag? You ever heard of this thing? You've heard of Australian rules. Check this out, okay? Oztag. Fucking I
so not not OZ, AUS.
No, it is OZ, okay? Oh. Here's the deal. You've heard of Australian rugby, right? Oz Australian rules, Aussie rules, footy, right? You ever heard of that?
Footy. Yeah, footy. I've heard of it. I couldn't tell you the rules, but yeah, I know of it.
But it's basically like it's the most meathead sport there is. It's just big fucking dudes with the ball, and they just smash into each other and rip each other to the ground and then pick it up and do it again for an hour and a half. And Oztag is kind of like touch football, but you have these two little tags on the side of your shorts. You have one tag on the left, one set tag on the right.
Oh, it's flag
and you
have football. To rip.
So is that what? So that's what I'm asking. Flag, so you have
that's
it.
That's basically that's what. So it's the same rules that we have for American football, except it's not tackle. You have the flags.
Great.
Hanging
so that's
down.
Exactly what it is. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you have this over in the States? So that's what you call it. Have you ever seen it played live?
I've played it live, not the Oztag, but I've played flag football. Yeah.
Do you guys get really intense, or is it more of a friendly, fun game?
So there was a tournament down in Florida, and we got together a radio station team, and we were fucking terrible. Like, we played three games, we lost all three. I think we scored one touchdown. It was a train wreck. And we were in, so they had it broken down into divisions based on age group and everything else. And we were in the lowest one thinking, yeah, let's just go and goof around and have fun. And then as we show up to our first game, it's all these fucking dudes where it's like, did you just get cut from the fucking Dolphins?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, man? Like, this is the lower level. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And so it couldn't get too intense because you would get penalized for that.
Do you remember a couple of years ago when I was like, yo, soccer, gonna start playing soccer with some of the dads in the community? And it didn't pan out, and I didn't get back into it. So one of the moms reached out to my wife and was like, hey, there's like a little community Oztag thing. And I played 5 years ago, and I've got a couple of friends that have never played. We're just going to put a couple teams together, and we're going to have fun. Cool. So we go out there to support my wife, and they're like, hey, Shim, do you want to play? And I'm like, oh, maybe.
Wait,
not
your
sure.
wife
I'll have
is
a look.
Playing?
Exactly. I'm not. My wife is, right?
All right.
So
well, co-ed,
what happened
up?
Is there's a few girls and guys that have never played the game before, and there's a few girls that have, and there's a couple of guys that really they're like Oztag. And it's like it's regular old football where it's like, come on, ref, what the fuck was that? What sort of call? You open your eyes. Come on. And they're just going at the ref, and they're calling, and then they're pissing off the ref, and then the ref like yellow cards them and takes their tags. And I'm like, how emasculating is it for a 40-year-old man to have your little tags taken off and be sent off the field for 2 minutes? I'm like, but they're so intense. And all the women were looking around like, dude, it's just a game like this. The half of the players, when it was their first game, were like, this is – this shouldn't be this intense. And you can see, it's like, you wonder, like, are you projecting boss rage after work at random people who are currently holding a football? Or do you just, like, you got things from when you were a kid where, like, I just love this game so much and I got to play it and this is what I look forward to all week? Because everyone else was like, I just want to have fun. This is getting really tense. It's getting real tense.
It's the competition factor. And it's one of the reasons why I stopped playing softball as an adult, because I'll toot my horn a little bit. I was really good at softball. Like, I played baseball through high school, and then when I picked up softball at age 25, I was one of the better players out on the field. And the first team I played for was my buddy Tom, and we were the unadoptables because it was all these guys that nobody else wanted on their team, and I had just started. Right. So we were terrible. Like, we'd get the shit kicked out of us constantly. Right. And then when people, like, so basically the way the fields were set up is you have a whole series of baseball diamonds, and then in the middle you have a convenience stand where you can get a hot dog or chips, and you can get beer. Yeah. First games, I believe, started at 6:30, and it was games every hour. 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, 9:30, 10:30 being the last one. So guys could just sit there and drink beer. And you'd never have to pay. I mean, if you just showed up, there was always a team that needed an extra player. So if you just sat there and hung out with your gear, people would constantly come up, hey, will you come play with us? And depending on the level and depending on the group, it was strange how hard fucking core some of these dudes were. And I just would sit back in awe where I'm like, it's no longer fun.
Yeah. Because it takes the fun away, man. It really does take the fun away, because you're scared if you make a mistake or whatever, you're going to get yelled at by a team member that's like, my life is in this.
Well, there's one there. So there was one, we got to wrap this up, but there was one where one of the guys on our team had hit a ground ball, and I constantly warned them, because in softball, you don't wear helmets. Like, you're not having the pitch coming at you, so you don't wear helmets.
Right.
I kept telling them, when you guys run through first base, cover your head. Do this.
Right.
Because, I mean, again, most of these guys, they maybe played baseball like me through high school, but the throws would go fucking errant all the time. So I tried to reinforce this to them. When you get running down the field, or when you get to first base, cover your fucking head. This one guy didn't do it. And the dude that threw it, who was playing shortstop or third base, might have been third base, fucking humming in, dude. Just whoosh, cracks the dude on the jaw. And you just hear this. I mean, it was harder than a fucking punch. Like, it sounded awful. The guy takes like a few steps, like stumbles, and then just fucking eats dirt. Oh. And he gets up, and it's just blood.
Oh, Jesus.
Pouring down his fucking
mouth. Was his jaw broken?
Two places. Shattered.
Oh, Jesus. For the softball. What was the guy? Here's the thing I don't understand. If he's running between first and second base, was the guy trying to tag him with the ball?
No, the guy was running between home and first. The guy that hit it, the guy that got hit, he had hit the ground ball to third base. The third baseman threw it to first, but the first baseman couldn't get to it. And so since he missed it, I mean, it was just fucking right there, dude.
Jesus.
Like, dude, you could see the stitches indented on the guy's face. And it's God damn. And again, I've spoken with Meyer about how I think it would be kind of cool to go out and maybe play some soccer here in El Paso. Like, I think it would be fun. But there's always those guys that just take it to this new level. And I have my own competitive genes that I need to fucking squash in these moments, because I get crazy fucking competitive.
I'm really on the fence. I wanted to talk to you about it for a second, because I'm like, I want to start doing a martial arts discipline. And I'm trying to figure out which one. And I've heard from a couple of people that are like, hey, okay, if you don't want to fuck up your hands because you play guitar, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Aikido are good places to start, because I'm starting fresh. Right, I just want to do something that doesn't have that competitive edge.
No matter what, it's going to be competitive. But if you wrap your hands and wear gloves, you're not going to fuck your hands up. You're more likely to damage your hand in jiu-jitsu. Like, you're more likely to break.
How come?
You're more likely to break a finger in jiu-jitsu than you are in boxing, or even kickboxing.
Yeah, I'm not worried about a finger. I'm worried about my wrists.
Same thing.
Your wrist is where the
If you do it properly, you're not going to hurt anything. Now, the problem that I ran into when I did kickboxing, The problem I ran into is my shoulders are fucked. I've had three shoulder surgeries. They're just they're completely riddled with arthritis
because of kickboxing.
No, from like it's like how I was born, like fucking back to baseball and stuff. So it's one of those unfortunate things. It's how my body's built. And one of the drills that you do, whether it's boxing or kickboxing, it's just 1-2, nonstop, right. And you just got to keep going. And my shoulder, they can't take it. My shoulders just fucking give up.
Right.
So, I mean, any sort of martial art, there's going to be that competitive side, and that was always my issue.
I like the idea of it being competitive. It's one-on-one. You're basically competing against yourself. There's another player there who's reflecting, you know, a goal of you want to attain that you can fight better than the other guy, but it's one-on-one. Whereas when you're in a team sport and you're supposed to be a member of a team, but there's like two guys that are like, no, we're not a team unless we win. And if we lose, fuck you. And you're going to hear about it. It's just like, I don't need that shit. I really don't. It's not high school anymore. So like,
I think that you're going into martial arts with a naive attitude a little bit.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm trying to figure out where I want to put my energy, because if I don't like, hey, I'm going to do soccer or something like that, then I'll do it for a while and I'll commit to it. But I don't want to commit to it until I know what I'm getting into. So I'm trying a few things, and I was thinking about Oztag. And after last night, I'm like, I don't know. I'll just
I'm good.
Not for Oztag. Yeah.
Okay. So my whole thing with kickboxing is my wife said I was going to be able to have one fight. Like she was going to let me go build up to one fight, and that never happened, unfortunately, because again, I shredded my fucking shoulder kickboxing. Like I had to have surgery, and it put me out for 6 fucking months. So that's when I finally came to the realization I can't do this. It was after that, because then it got to the point where I was training with my coach Isaac, and then he also had this kid who was like 24-year-old, just fucking mini Hulk of a fucking monster a man. And we would spar, and he fucked my shit up on a daily basis. Like, that's why I ended up buying the full headgear, because I would constantly come home with a bloody nose. He's the one that broke my rib. The first
Didn't you tell him to back off? Was it because he was going too hard, or because you just
he was like, he's that aggressive son of a bitch. Like, I'm going to fuck you up. And I'm like, dude, I'm like 40. Like, congrats. Right. Yeah. You hit an old man. But no, like it was, so the first drill. So Isaac and I, there was a time where after I had surgery and he closed his gym, we didn't do any training for a while because he wasn't training. We reconnected. Yeah. The first practice back, we did the tire drill. What the tire drill is, it's basically you take a giant tire and you put your left foot in it, and another guy puts his left foot, or right, depending on which, if you're orthodox or southpaw.
Yeah.
And so my left foot is in it. You're not allowed to take your foot out.
Right.
You got to stay in. And then you just fucking throw. And you're just swinging. And we came to the agreement, we're not hitting in the head. I mean, if he had hit me in the head, I would have been out in a fucking coma for a week. So we came to that agreement. But he hit me so hard on my side, it broke my rib. And
dude, did you go down straight away? Or did you try to
keep going? No, I tried. I fought, man. I ain't no bitch. I fucking tried. I was like, he hit me, and I was like, oh, fuck. And I'm like, I'm trying to punch. And I was like, no. Twice. He knocked me down twice with fucking body shots. So at this time, the agreement with my wife was still, I'm allowed to train for one fight. That's it. Win or lose, you're done. But there was now a stipulation. You had better not come home hurt. Or if you are hurt, I don't want to fucking hear about it. So I got home and I couldn't move without grunting because my rib was broken.
Right.
So I go to get in bed that night, and I'm standing over the bed, and I'm like, how the fuck do I do this? Like, cause she'd already, like she's half asleep. Like she's just dozing off. And I'm like, I can't make any noise. What the fuck do I do?
You can't get in bed without screaming.
Like I try to lay down quick. But then the problem is now the bed bounces, and I go, and I make that noise, and I woke her up. Fucking sucks.
And and then you have to hear about it, and that's the prerequisite. I don't want to hear about it. That's kind of – so then that was the end of it? I broke a rib. Was that when it was – that's when you were done?
That was only the first practice. After that, I'd come home with bloody noses and all kinds of shit fucked up.
How long did you train for before you piked out?
Total?
So,
4 years.
Yeah, and all you had to show for it was a lot of pain.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty, like, if somebody were to start some shit.
That sounded like a cat meow.
Well, I mean, I'm like, if somebody were to start some shit, I could probably fucking do some damage. Like, I learned some shit, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to do it. Like, I didn't want to just go work out. I wanted to learn something while I worked
out. That's kind of why I want to do it, too. I've been working out just for a long time. I want to learn some new shit.
If, like, boxing is cool, but it is just your arms, but you do get to wear shoes. Kickboxing, you don't get to wear shoes. And I have pictures on my social media for anybody who's still around for this encore. You can go see what happens to the bottom of your feet when you are constantly twisting them as you're throwing punches and kicks.
What happens to them?
Oh, the skin comes off. It just gets ripped right off.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is there any other martial arts where your body doesn't get hurt?
Here's the point is to do damage. Like, what the fuck? Like, okay, so, like, what's your pain threshold? Like, what do you think? Like, how much?
Oh, no, I don't have a pain. I have no pain threshold. I've never done well with
pain. Then you don't want mixed martial arts. It's not, or you don't want any sort
of. I'm not talking about mixed martial arts. I'm just talking about some sort of. Here's the thing. The concept is a discipline, something that has goals where it's like white belt, yellow belt, green belt, working your way to a black, even if it takes 10 years to get to a black, something where I'm like, hey, something to work towards as opposed to just going to the gym.
If you don't have the tolerance for the pain, I don't think any martial art, any sort of fighting is.
Yeah, you might be right. I've only started thinking about it the last couple of weeks just because I'm like, mostly because my wife started doing Oztag and I'm like, yeah, I got to find a thing. I got my own thing, but I've been doing it for 10 years. I'm like, I need to find a thing that's a sporty thing, that's something to fucking do. But anyway.
Yeah, no, that was
like. This is like a half-hour encore we've done now.
Yeah, we've covered like four different topics. But yeah, it was like one of the greatest days for my wife and my mom was when I told them both, I'm not fighting anymore. Right. And God bless my mom. Like, she bought me my gloves. She bought me like all this different gear. Fully well knowing it's just her son getting the shit kicked out of him, and knowing it's hurting me, but she knew it's what I wanted, so she bought this stuff. But when I finally called her and I told her, like, hey, I think that's it, I gotta hang up the gloves because I can't, my body can't take it, my shoulders. I've thought about doing something like a jiu-jitsu because I think my shoulders could take that, but right now I just don't have the time for that. So but let's reconvene, let's reconvene next week in an encore, and we'll figure it out there. So, but we really got to wrap this up.
We do. Do we have an ending for that? We just say bye. Bye.
You can say bye. Encore.
Bye, encore.